Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Bava Kama Daf Nun Dalid. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a specially marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage and then go to option 2. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur begins 5 lines from the bottom of Daf Nun Dalid. We have a quote from the Mishnah, Nofal l'soichoi, there fell into a pit, Shor chirish shoite v'koton chayav. The markings that you see, a house marking, you'll notice on the side under our nosei, which is a topic heading / mivneh, structural note, a house is featured, and it represents 4 shlavim, 4 stages, levarer, mahu, Pirush HaMishnah, what is the explanation, what is the meaning of that phrase, Shor Chirish Shoyte V'Koton? The Gemara, My Shor Chirish Shoyte V'Koton, what is meant by that? Bear in mind that the Mishnah said that if this falls into the pit, so the owner of the pit bears responsibility. Ilemo Shor Shel Chirish Shor Shel Shoyte Shor Shel Koton. If you think it means the shor owned by a deaf mute, or owned by an imbecile, or owned by a minor, and the Mishnah teaches that there is culpability on the part of the pit owner, ha shor shel pikeach potter, are we then to assume through inference that the shor owned by a man of sound mind, so the pit owner would be exempt? How could that be when we don't find that in any verse? As Rashi says, Heicho patrei kro, where in the pasuk do we see an exemption for on the part of the pit owner if an ox owned by a man of sound mind falls in? So the owner of the pit doesn't bear responsibility. But that would be the obvious inference if you learn that shor chirish means the shor owned by a deaf mute or an imbecile, etc. Omar of Yochanan, shor shehu chirish, shor shehu shoyte, shor shehu koton. Rabbi Yochanan says that the Mishnah refers to a shor that it itself is a deaf mute or lacks basic, let's say, animal sanity, or is a small animal. We continue at the top of Omid Beis. Well, then what would the inference be? Ha shor shehu pikeach potter. Are we then to infer that a shor that is of sound mind that falls into a pit, so the pit owner would be exempt? Omer Rabbi Yirmiyah, so Rabbi Yirmiyah explains, Lo Mibaya Komar. The style of the Mishnah is in what we call the Lo Mibaya fashion. Literally means, I don't need to tell you. What do we mean by that? Lo Mibaya Shor Shehu Pikeach Dechayov. I don't have to tell you that if it's a shor that's of sound animal mind, that the pit owner would bear responsibility. Avol shor cheresh shoyte v'koton emo. I might have thought chershuso garmalo. Its inability to hear is what caused it to fall in. Katnuso garmalo. The youthfulness, the smallness of the animal caused it to fall in. Veliftar, and maybe on those grounds the pit owner should be exempted. Komash Malon, so the Mishnah tells us that the pit owner is nevertheless chayav. He does bear responsibility. As we go on in the Gemara, you notice triangles begin to appear, and on the side of the Gemara, we refer to this as a ma'akav, an attempt to keep track, achar, hakushyus v'atshuvos, the questions and answers. So as the triangle appears with the point facing up, we see a question, and the inverted triangle is a response. So we just heard from Rav Yirmiyah that the Mishnah is taught in the lo mibaya fashion, that I don't have to tell you that in the case of a shor that is of sound animal mind, the pit owner is chayav. That would be, that's obvious. But if the animal is somehow lacking in one of these characteristics that we already mentioned, maybe that's the cause of its falling in, and let us exempt the pit owner. So the Mishnah's point is to tell me, no, even there, the pit owner is chayav. So Omar le Rav Acha le Ravina, Rav Acha asks, v'hatanya, but do we not have a source that says, nofal l'soichay bar das potter, my lav shor bar das. The Brisa says that if there fell into the pit someone of sound mind, pit owner is exempt. And what are we in fact speaking of here? Is it not an animal of sound animal mind? And you see exemption. Contrary to what Rav Yirmiyah said, Omar Leilo. So Ravina responds, not so. The source says Odom. It's talking about a man of sound mind. So pit owner is exempt. And we've seen already in the past a Xeris HaKosuv, a Posuk, Shor Velo Adam, that would explain that. Question, Elo Me'ata, Adam Ben Das Hu Depoter Halav Ben Das Hu Dechayev? Well, are we then to infer that from that Brisa, that only if a man was of sound mind, so pit owner is exempt? If the man lacks sound mind, so the pit owner bears guilt? But that's not true. Shor v'lo adam ksiv. The pasuk says that pit owner is guilty only if shor, ox, falls in, not if man, whatever the state of the man is. Elo my ben das. What does ben das mean? It really does refer to a person, but not the specific individual. Min ben das. A person, a human being, is capable of a high level of knowledge, as a, and that's a reference to human beings. So for human beings, there is exemption. But a shor, that is a ben das, the pit owner would be chayev. Like Rav Yirmiyah said, Omar le, we ask, though, v'atanya nofal l'soichay shor ben das potter. Here you have it, you have a shor specified. Can't say that the exemption here is talking about human beings. It talks about a shor that is of sound mind that falls into a pit. The pit owner is exempt. By the way, the reasoning for the exemption is that the since it's of sound mind, it should have looked, the animal should have looked where it's going and avoided the pit. So we can't hold the pit owner responsible. Elo Omar Rava. We have to go back to explaining what was the Mishnah's intent when it spoke about the shor chere shoyte v'katan and that resulted in chayav. So elo marava shor v'hu chere shor v'hu shoyte shor v'hu katan davka. Like this, by the way, this explanation we're noting is like Rabbi Yochanan. That only a case of a shor that happens to be a deaf mute, an imbecilic, or a small, only then is there exemption on the part of the pit owner. I should say, only then there is a chayav. Only then the pit owner is held responsible. Avol shor v'hu pikeach, but a shor that's of sound mind, putter, the pit owner is exempt. My taima, why is that the case? Answer, the boy lay uni umeza. The animal should have looked where it's going. And we can't hold the pit owner responsible. Tanyo nami hochi. And we have a brisa that supports this. Nofal soichai shor chere shoita vikotan visuma umahalech balaila. Chayav, if an animal that is a deaf mute, imbecilic, small, blind, or an animal walking at night that falls into an exposed pit, so the owner of the pit must compensate. Pikeach umahalich biyom, an animal of sound mind walking by day that falls into a pit, potter, the pit owner, is exempt. As we said, because the animal should have watched where it was going. The Mishnah. Echod shor v'echod kol behemov. Whether it be a shor or any other animal, the same law applies. And now as you look on in the Mishnah, you'll see eight areas of halacha where, in practical terms, there is no distinction. In other words, even though we have specified, you saw in the case of boar, the Torah itself specified shor, but it's not excluding other animals. And the inclusion of other animals applies. Let's go through the Mishnah, l'nefilas habor, as we just said. Number two, hafroshas har Sinai, when the Torah was given, the Almighty issued a command that no creatures should draw unto the mountain. That's as far as the spirit of the halacha is concerned. The Torah itself says, and Rashi quotes the pasuk im behema imish. However, we know that we include undomesticated animals and birds as well should not draw unto Mount Sinai at the time of the giving of the Torah. So all animals are included, even though the pasuk has a somewhat limited tone to it. What else? Ulisashlume kefel. Even though in the pasuk it says mishor v'ad chamor, other animals are included regarding paying double. That's in the case of the theft of an animal, any animal, including birds. The thief has to pay double. Ulahashavas aveda, returning a lost animal. So even though the Torah uses a specific term, nevertheless, when it comes to practical halacha, all animals are included in the obligation to return the lost one. Number five, the Prika. Prika is the Mishnah of that the Torah speaks of helping an animal that you see is suffering with a load that's too heavy for it to carry. So that even though the Torah specifies, as we said, a specific animal that one must assist when overburdened, the halacha extends to all animals that are carrying burdens too heavy for it. Lachasima, the prohibition of muzzling an animal while it is threshing grains. The Torah speaks about a shor, lo sachsom shor b'disho. But if you're using another kind of animal to thresh grains, a similar prohibition applies. L'kilayim, for the realm of mixed breeding animals. The pasuk says, behemtecha lo sarbia kilayim, you shall not mate unlike species of animals together. And the Torah speaks about behema. Behema is a domesticated type animal, but in reality, we include wild animals and birds as well in this prohibition. There's another form of kilayim involving drawing a cart together with two unlike type animals. The pasuk says, "Lo sachro shor v'chamor." There, the Torah speaks about drawing a plow with two different kinds of animals together while drawing the plow. That's forbidden. And even though the Torah uses the examples of shor and chamor, it's true with regard to any two different kinds of animals that you put together. L'Shabbos, regarding Shabbos, there is the mitzvah, the Torah says that you shall not have your animals do melacha on Shabbos. And the pasuk speaks about your behema. And we know that that the prohibition extends beyond that. In fact, in the Torah, the first set of Ten Commandments says Uvehemtecha, and the second set of Ten Commandments, the first set is in Parshas Yisro of Sefer Shmos, and the second set of Ten Commandments is in Parshas Vayetzchanan of Sefer Dvorim, and there the pasuk actually itemizes. It says Vishorcha v'chamorcha v'chol behemtecha. Mentions an ox, a donkey, and it says all your animals. But we know that Shabbos, the Shabbos prohibition of activating animals goes beyond that. It includes chaya, undomesticated animals, and oif, and birds as well. So we see eight categories where even though scripturally there seems to be a, we'll say, a level of limitation or specification, in practical terms, in all eight areas that we just enumerated, the halacha extends to all types of animals. V'chein chaya v'oif, kayotze bohen. So that the Mishnah mentioned, whether it be an ox or all other behemoth, domesticated animals. And here we see v'chein chai v'yof, in addition to the opening of the Mishnah that said v'echod, echod shor v'echod kol behemoth, we see also chaya and of, chaya are undomesticated animals, of are birds, are kayotzman, are like them, like the behemoth. In kein loma nemar shor o chamor, so why do we find the Torah specifying those animals? Elo shediber ha-kosu b'hoiva, the Torah's style is to speak of the hoiva, the common example. So when you speak about a beast of burden, you'll speak about a chamor. When you speak about plowing, you'll speak about a plowing with a shor, and etc. The common examples, but they are not exclusionary. As we look in the Gemara, we note that we have a double underline marking scheme. On the side of the Gemara, under the Nosei Mivne heading, the double underline highlights Shmoina Noisim, eight topics Hamuzkorim B'Mishnah Shekol Kol Behema B'Chlal. So we're highlighting each one of the examples that we just went through, and you'll see citations, scriptural citations along the way. So we continue now in the Gemara. Number one, Linafila Sabor. Though the Torah said V'nofal Shoma Shor O Chamor, mentions the falling into a pit of a shor, an ox, or a chamor, a donkey, all animals are included. Kesef Yoshiv Leba'alav Ksiv Kol De'is Le Bailim Ke De'amoron. Anything that has an owner will, that falls into a pit, will cause the pit owner to be guilty, to be required to compensate for their damage. Kidamoran, we spoke about this already on Omid Aleph. We have a little arrow indicating to look back to Omid Aleph, and you can see where that was mentioned. So that Kesef Yoshiv Olav is after a long discussion on Omid Aleph, when we were asking, how do you know that Ophos are included in the penalty of Bor? So we finally cited this pasuk of Kesef Yoshiv Olav. Lahafroshes Har Sinai, regarding the mitzvah, the command to keep away from Mount Sinai when the divine presence was resting thereon, the pasuk says, Im behema imish lo yichye. That's the pasuk. V'chaya b'chlal behema havya. We know from other sources, which you can see reference made to that, that chaya is b'chlal behema. Rashi quotes the source for that, that undomesticated animals are included in the term behema. So that helped when the pasuk says in behema shall not draw to Mount Sinai, I understand chaya as well. And the word im, which you see in the pasuk, l'rabbis es ha'ofos, that shows to include birds as well. So one must keep his birds away from Mount Sinai at that time. Number three, l'sashlume kefel, kid amrinon, as we say in the following drosha, al kol dvar pesha, klal, kol dvar pshia. The need to pay double includes anything that one is capable of showing negligence over it. Without getting into too much detail regarding the source just cited, the Torah speaks about a shomer chinam, a person that was appointed to watch something or that agreed to watch something gratis, and he claimed it was stolen, and it turns out that he made off with it himself. So it's a parsha that deals with the idea of theft in the context of a shomer chinam, and a shomer chinam himself bears guilt as a shomer if he acted negligently. So that when the Pasuk says there, I'll call Devar Pesha, we say anything over which one could act in as a shomer in a negligent fashion. So that will include all items, including all kinds of animal life. There is much more on this particular topic at the beginning of the seventh perek of this Masechta, so we'll hold off till then. Number four, L'hashovas Aveda. The Pasuk says, L'chol Aveda Sechicha. The Pasuk is quite inclusive of all items that are lost, which will certainly include all forms of animal life. L'frika, regarding the requirement to help an animal that's crouching down under its overburdened state. Yolev Chamor Chamor Mishabos. A gzeirus shava appears. You find the word chamor in the context of Shabbos, and regarding Shabbos, we will see later all forms of animal life are included in the prohibition of activating them on Shabbos, and in the posuk of prika, of lightening the burden upon an animal, the word chamor also appears. A donkey, which is of course a common beast of burden, is overburdened, and you must alleviate its burden. So just like in Shabbos, the word chamor appears and it extends to all animals, so too regarding the mitzvah of prika, all animals, even though the Torah specifies chamor. Number six, lechasima, the prohibition of muzzling an ox. Yalev shor shor mishabbos, gzeira shava appears between the two topics of chasima and Shabbos. Just like in Shabbos, the word shor appears. We mentioned in the second set of Ten Commandments, the Pasuk says, v'shorcha v'chamorcha v'chol behemtecha, and in the case of chasima, the prohibition of muzzling an animal while it is threshing grains. So just like in Shabbos, shor is not limited to shor, so too, regarding the prohibition of an animal while threshing, having it muzzled up, preventing it from eating from that which it's working on, it's not limited to the shore. It extends to all animals. L'kilayim, the prohibition of mixing animals. E kilayim d'charisha. If you're talking about the prohibition of plowing, drawing a plow with two different kinds of animals, drawing carts and Pasuk speaks about a plow. So, Yolif Shor Shor Mishabbos, we will use the Gzeira Shofa that we described already from Shabbos to Kilayim, where the word Shor appears. E Kilayim de Harbo, if it's Kilayim, the mixing of animals in the Harbo, in the breeding sense, Yolif Behemtecha Behemtecha Mishabbos. The word Behemtecha appears in the two topics, and we understand, just like in Shabbos, Behema is not to be activated, and we know that we include all kinds of animals. Even though Behema sounds like a domesticated variety of animal, we know that we go beyond that. So too, regarding the prohibition of Harba, mixed breeding, any two kinds of animals, animal life. Vigabi Shabbos Menolan, we've been citing Shabbos already several times, where in Shabbos, do you know that we extend the mitzvah of Shabbos observance, the prohibition of activating animals on Shabbos for work purposes? How do we know that that extends to all animals? Desanya, Rabbi Yosheimer Mishum Rabbi Yishmael. Bedibros Horishonas Nemar Avdecha V'Amoscha Uvhemdecha. In the first set of Ten Commandments, It says that you shall not do any malacha, and not you, not your slaves, not your bondmaids, nor your behemtecha. In the second set of Ten Commandments, it says, v'shorcha, v'chamorcha, v'chol behemtecha. Is there not a redundancy in this pasuk? V'alo shor v'chamor b'chlal kol behema hoyu. A shor and chamor are included in behema. V'loma yatsu, why are shor and chamor specified when the Torah includes them already in the term behemtecha? Lomar loch. This teaches me. Ma shor v'chamor amurkan. Chaya v'oif kayotzi bohen. Just like shor and chamor that are stated by Shabbos, chaya and oif are included. Af kol. So to all other places that you see the terms shor and chamor, chaya ve'oif kayotze bohen, whatever aloha appears in those contexts speaking about the shor and chamor, realize that chaya and oif, undomesticated animals and birds, are included. The Gemara asks, and you'll notice we have a new marking scheme. There's a trapezoid or volcano shape that appears in alternating directions. On the side of the Gemara under the Mivneh heading, this is a ma'akav, an attempt to keep track, achar hamasu maton, keep track of the give and take, b'chipus mokush shabbos chayev b'chol bal chai, that Shabbos, in fact, applies to all living creatures. The narrow part facing upwards equals she'elos, and flipped around equals tshuvos. So now we continue in the Gemara. Notice that this is a fairly extensive discussion just by looking at the number of times this volcano shape appears. The Gemara asks, Emo behemo de dibros harishonos equals klal. The word behemo in the first set of Ten Commandments is a general expression. Shorcha v'chamorcha de dibros harishonos prat. The specification of these animals, the ox and the donkey, in the second set of Ten Commandments represents itemizing, detail or itemizing. And structurally, if you have a pasuk or set up like that, we call it klal uprat, a general statement and then a limited statement. And the hermeneutic law that governs understanding of psukim says, ein b'chlal elama shebeprat. The general category contains nothing more than the specified examples. Shor v'chamor in, midiachrin olo. Only shor and chamor are part of the Shabbos restriction and nothing else. Well, we don't say that. Why not? Amri, we answer. V'chol behem techo, the dibros achronos, chozar v'kolal. In the second set of Ten Commandments, the expression of V'chol b'emtecha appears, following the mention of Shor and Chamor. And that is a general expression. That's what we mean, Chozar v'kolal. It then goes back, goes and again states a general expression. Now, what is the style of the verses? Klal, uprat, uklal. You open with a general, then have a specified example, and then a general statement again. When you have that, iata don elo kein haprat. You extend and evaluate what is included in the general category by looking at the specified examples and say things that are like the specified examples will be included in the law being taught. Ma haprat mefurish balei chayim. Afkol balei chayim, just like shor and chamor are living animals, so to all living animals will fall under the Shabbos restriction. Question: V'emo maha prat mefurush dover shin aveilosu mitamid b'magu v'masa afkol dover shin aveilosu mitamid b'magu v'masa avaloi v'isloi. If you say that we establish what's included in the general teaching, the general law, by looking at the specified examples, instead of making such a broad category of all living animals, looking at shor and chamor, what do they have in common. They have in common that when these animals die and there's a carcass lying there, they communicate tuma through contact or carriage. That is not true regarding eifis, regarding birds. A dead bird does not communicate defilement through contact or carriage. So how do you know in Shabbos that it would be prohibited to use a bird, to activate a bird for some kind of malacha, for some kind of constructive activity? Amri, we answer, Im Kain, Nichtov Rachmona Chad Prota. If, as you are suggesting, that birds are not included, then the Torah should have written just one example. But it wrote two. So the fact that it wrote two, it suggests that I'm going to include, in fact, not just an animal that's metam magho masa, but even birds as a part of the prohibition of Shabbos. The Gemara says that's not a reasonable suggestion. Let the Torah write just one. Hey Nichtov Rachmona, which one should the Torah have written? I Kosav Rachmona Shor, had the Torah written in Shabbos just ox, that would have misled me. Hava mina kurv legabi mizbeach in, only animals that are eligible to be offered in potential as sacrifices, that variety of animal that could be offered as a sacrifice, that's the kind of animal that you cannot activate on Shabbos. Sheinu korev legabi mizbeach lo, but something like a horse, a donkey, animals that you cannot use as sacrifices would not fall under the Shabbos restriction. Therefore, kosav rachmona chamor, the Torah had to write chamor so as not to get that misimpression. A chamor is something that you do not offer as a sacrifice, and yet it is prohibited on Shabbos. V'i kosav rachmona chamor, and had I cited just one example, the donkey, hava mina kadosh b'v'chayra in, she'en kadosh b'v'chayra lo, only animals that are sanctified as a firstborn, that when a male version of a particular animal is born, it is sanctified. That is true with regard to a chamor and other kinds of, say, kosher variety animals. Chamor itself is not a kosher variety, but it's a special case. So I would have thought only those kind of animals that have Kedushas Bechor. For example, a firstborn horse doesn't have Kedushas Bechor, sanctity of a firstborn. So I would have thought, had the Torah written only Chamor, only animals that have this firstborn sanctity element to them would be restricted on Shabbos. But those that do not have this Kedushas Bechor to them would... those kind of animals, the firstborn of which would not be sanctified as a firstborn, would not be included in the Shabbos prohibition, Kosav Rachmona Shor. Therefore, the Torah had to write Shor so as to include even those kind of animals. Not that the Shor itself is like that, but the Shor serves to include all animals, even those animals that are not Kadosh B'Vechorov. So the use of the two examples, Shor and Chamor, is not going to yet include birds. These two examples are necessary so as to dispel the ideas of something limited to as sacrificial potential or something limited to Kedushas Bechor. But either way, I will still suggest that only animals that are metame b'mag v'masa are including the Shabbos restriction. I still don't know about birds. So we answer, Ela, v'chol behemtecha equals ribui hu. This represents a new approach in how to darsh and how to expound upon verses. V'chol behemtecha is not to be understood in the klal uprat fashion, but rather as a ribui, as a inclusive expression. And that being the case, we include even birds. So as far as the question we asked before regarding Shabbos, how do you know that that even birds are included? We answer that over here. So this represents the end of that particular discussion. Now we have a new discussion coming off of what we just discussed, and we feature this on the side under our No Sour topic heading, Diyun, a discussion and analysis b'mashmois hamila kol b'droshois al psukim. The word kol, we just cited kol behemtecha, is a riboy. Well, is it in fact a riboy, or is it a klal? We mentioned klal, pratu klal. Klal represents a general statement. The results of klal, pratu klal, in how much you can include beyond the written word, are different than the results of how much you will include when you explain the verse as a riboy, as an inclusive expression. We got a little taste of that just now, and that was that if you were going to darshan the psukim klal pratu klal, I wouldn't have successfully included birds. Since we darshan the pasuk in the riboy fashion, I am able to include birds. The Gemara asks, v'chol hecha dekosav rachmona kol, riboy who? Where the word kol appears, does it function as a riboy? V'ha gabi meiser dechtiv kol. We find in the context of psukim, dealing with meiser sheni. Meiser sheni is the tithe separated from one's produce, the first, second, fourth, and fifth years of the sabbatical agricultural cycle. 10% of your produce during those years you're to take to Yerushalayim or redeem them, being that they have sanctity, onto money, and spend the money on food in Yerushalayim and eat it there. So regarding Meiser, it says, Desanya, V'nosata kesef b'chil shirta v'nafshecha, you shall offer your money, pay your money for all that you desire. That is a klal. The pasuk goes on to say, Baboku v'tzon v'yayinu v'shechar. Here the pasuk specifies animals and sheep and wine and beer. Prat. Those are specific examples of items that you can buy with your meiser sheni money, the money that upon which you had redeemed your produce, your 10% of your produce, that particular tithe called meiser sheni. U'v'chol asher tisholcho nafshecha, that's the continuation of the pasuk, chazar v'kolal. Klal uprat uklali atadon elokein haprat. When you have a pasuk built, set up like that, with a general, specific, followed by a general statement, we say, Maha prat mefurish pri mi pri vigdule karka, just like the specific examples are pri mi pri, something that results from something capable of reproduction. Pri has to do with offspring, but offspring not limited to animal life, but plant life as well. Something that grows from the seed of its predecessor. Ma, so we say, just like the details of the pasuk, boker, tzon, yayin, come from grapes, shechar, also comes from barley, from vegetation. And what other characteristic do we apply to these examples? The gidule karka, they come forth from the ground. They, even animals, their the food that they eat comes from the ground that sustains them. So afko pri mi pri vigule karka. So too, anything else that has these characteristics is an option for your use of the meiser sheni money. What, so that having been said, what can you not buy with your meiser sheni money? So Rashi enumerates things like truffles and mushrooms, water and salt. They lack that characteristic of being pri mi pri. The term gidule karka would exclude fish, for example. That even though fish do come from reproduction, they nevertheless are not termed gidulei karka. So we've asked our question. What is our question? Before, when we were dealing with Hilchos Shabbos and the inclusion of birds, we said that kol is a ribui. Here we have the word kol, v'nosati kesef b'chol asher taveh nafshecha, and we see it functioning as a klal, not as a ribui. The Gemara answers, Amri, b'chol equals klola. The word in the Meister Sheni was b'chol with a chof, with a beis in front of it. That shows us you're dealing with a klal. The word kol, without the beis in front of it, the Pasuk in Shabbos said v'chol behemtecho without a beis in front of it, ribui. There it functions as an inclusive expression. And that enabled us to include even birds. Iboyasema kol nami klolahu. Another approach says that kol is merely a klal, like we saw by Meister Sheni. Miu hai kol behacha, the kol in Shabbos, ribui hu. Here it's different. It's a ribui. Midahavi lemichtav uvehem techa kidichtiv bedibros harishonos. The word in the second set of Ten Commandments could have been uvehem techa, as it appeared in the first set of Ten Commandments. We have a little arrow to the side of the Gemara text. You can see where that was alluded to earlier. But the Torah in the second set of Ten Commandments didn't simply say uvehem techa. The fact that the Torah went out of its way to add the word v'chol shows us that here it's different. Here it functions as a ribui, and enabling us to include birds. Hashto diamris kol ribui hu. Now that you're saying that the appearance of the word kol comes to include even non-behemos, even birds, behemtecha de dibros rishonos, v'shor v'chamor de dibros achronos lomali. What function does the word behemtecha in the first set of Ten Commandments play, and the specific examples of shor and chamor in the second set of Ten Commandments? So you have three words we have to account for, and you can see we've used diamonds to highlight those very words in our response. Amri, we answer. Shor, the word shor in the second set of Ten Commands by Shabbos Lagmuri enables us to learn a gezera shava, shor, shor, lechasima. We mentioned that point above. To learn from Shabbos to the prohibition of muzzling an animal while it's threshing grain. Just like by Shabbos, we've established all creatures are part of the Shabbos work prohibition. So too, when activating an animal for chasima, for threshing, for disha, it is prohibited to muzzle them, even though the Torah spoke in terms of a shor. Chamor, the word chamor in Shabbos is available to enable us to make a gzera shava, la'agmuri chamor, chamor leprika. Also a point that we had mentioned earlier, regarding the mitzvah of lightening an overburdened animal. The word chamor appears in the overburdened animal context, and it appears in Shabbos, and just like in Shabbos, chamor is not in Shabbos, we're not limiting you to chamor in terms of Shabbos prohibition, but all animals, so too, any overburdened animal, you have a mitzvah to lighten its burden. Behemtecha, the word behemtecha that we saw in the first set of Ten Commandments, what is its role? Lagmuri behemtecha, behemtecha, lekilayim. Also, a point we had mentioned before, in the context of harbo. Ihochi, afilu odom litzar, we saw by Kilayim the prohibition is not limited to the animals mentioned, but we include all animals. We should say that there should be a prohibition in drawing a cart with man and an animal. What have we been saying so far? We've been saying, just like by Shabbos, we include more than the specific examples. So too in Kilayim. Part of Kilayim is the prohibition of drawing a cart, two different kinds of animals together. That's derived from Shabbos. But what else do we know about Shabbos? We know that on Shabbos, man is restricted in constructive activity. So are you going to say that a man tied together to a cart or to a plow, together with an animal, is something that is prohibited? Halama Tanan, why then do we have a Tanaic source that says, Oda mutarim kulam lachrosh v'limshoch? A man together with any one kind of animal, any one variety of animal, is permitted in drawing a plow or a cart. Limshoch is to draw a cart. So why, if we are learning the Isur Kilayim, which includes prohibition of drawing items with mixed variety animals, two different kinds of animals tied together, why does that prohibition not extend to a man together with an animal? Omar Rav Papa. Rav Papa answers. He says, Papunoi yadi taima doha milsa. The man from Papuno. Papuno is the name of a place. Sounds like Rav Papa's name, but on the surface, there's no connection, unless Rav Papa happened to have been from that place. I wouldn't be able to prove that. Papunoi, as Rashi says, is a reference to the people from that place. There's a place, I believe, in New Guinea called Papua. So if that helps, you can use that as an example. The people from Papunoi know the reason. And Umanu, and who is that man? Rav Acho Bar Yankov. He's from Papuna, and he knows the answer. Omar Kro. That is a pasuk in the second set of Ten Commandments dealing with Shabbos. And we see from here, lahanocha, for the concept of resting, hikshesiv, man is compared to all the other creatures. V'lo l'dover acher, but not compared to all the other creatures regarding other matters, like kilayim. So from this we see that even though Shabbos is rather inclusive, the comparison of man to animals is limited to the realm of menucha, of resting, of desisting from constructive activity. It's not to be extended to other realms of law. Shoa Rabbi Hanina ben Ogiel es Rabbi Chia bar Abba. Rabbi Hanina asks Rabbi Chia the following question: Mipnei ma bedibros rishonis lo ne'emar bohen toiv, ubedibros ha'achronos. We continue at the top of Daf Nun Hey. Ne'emar bohen toiv. The word tov does not appear in the first set of Ten Commandments, but appears in the second set of Ten Commandments, in the pasuk dealing with honoring one's father and mother. There, the pasuk says, "Leman yitav loch," honor them so that things shall be good for you, so that the Almighty can benefit you. Omar lo, so Reb Chia bar Abba says, he makes a point. He responds and he says to him, until you ask me about why Tov appears in the second set of Ten Commandments in the form of Laman Yitav Loch, Shaleni in Ne'emar Bohen Tov Imav, ask me whether or not the word Tov even appears. Sheini Yodayim Ne'emar Bohen Tov Imav, I'm not aware. I don't know whether or not the word Tov appears. On the surface, it appears that Reb Chia bar Abba was not aware of the verse itself. That might raise people's eyebrows. Here you have the greatest of our people, the Amora, Reb Chia bar Abba. When we speak about Amoroyim, The truth is, we have no concept of how great these people were. Even to refer to them as people is something that we do with some hesitation. As the Gemara in Shabbos says, "In Rishonim kemalochim anu kebnei Adam." If we view the earlier generations as angels, so we have a right to call ourselves people. So we have to realize that we're talking about people of extraordinary stature. And yet in this Gemara, he testifies about himself. Instead of asking me why, ask me whether the word Tov even appears at all. So, Tosfos in Maseches Bava Basra Daf Kuf Yud Gimel makes that point, that fluency and total familiarity with psukim is not something that you necessarily were expected to have expertise in. Baal Peh, of course, we're speaking in terms of knowing by heart. I also would recommend, if you want to look into this topic a little more, note the Gemara and the commentary of the Rashash that you'll find in Bava Basra, Daf Ches. There are more commentaries on this particular passage. You can see, for example, the Ma'aretz Chiyus on our Gemara over here in Bava Kama Daf Nun Hey. He has an extensive commentary as to what was going on over here, especially in light of the fact that this pasuk of Laman Yitavloch is darshaned quite profoundly at the end of the first perek of Kiddushin. So the existence of this particular pasuk, being that it was the focus of a Drushas Chazal, you would expect that the Reb Chiya Bar Abba was aware of it. So that if that be the case, when he says over here, instead of asking me why, ask me whether it's there or not, there's a deeper explanation to it, which we're simply directing those interested to look at the Ma'aretz Chiyus commentary. We're going to continue with the flow of the Gemara as it is, where Reb Chiya Bar Abba is, we'll say, deflecting the question and he says, Klach Eitzel Rabbi Tanchum Bar Chaniloi. You go to Reb Tanchum, Shei Rogil Eitzel Rabbi Shua Ben Levi. Reb Tanchum was a regular by the great Rabbi Shua Ben Levi, Shei Boki Ba Godop. Rabbi Shua Ben Levi was very great in Agadic passages. Ozal Legabei. So Rabbi Chanina, who was asking the question, took him up on that and went to Rabbi Tanchum. Omar Le, Rabbi Tanchum responded, Mimenu lo shamati. From Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi himself, I did not hear an explanation for why Tov is not mentioned in the first set of Ten Commandments. However, Rabbi Tanchum goes on to say, Kach Omar Le Shmuel bar Nochum, Achi imoi shel Rav Acha Rabbi Chanina. Thusly, Shmuel, the son of Nochum, was the brother of the mother of Rav Acha Rabbi Chanina. V'yamri lo, another version is Avi imo, the father of the mother shel Rav Achi Rabbi Chanina. Hayil v'soifon l'shtaber. You want to know why Tov doesn't appear in the first set of Ten Commandments? Those first two tablets were smashed. They were lishtaber. They were eventually broken by Moshe Rabbeinu when he saw what was taking place at the episode of the golden calf. V'chisoifen lishtaber mayhave. So what? Okay, so they were going to break. There were a lot of other holy verses written on the first set of Ten Commandments that were smashed together with Moshe Rabbeinu's smashing of the tablets. What's so special about Tov? Om Ravashi, Chas V'Sholom, Posko Toivo, Mi'Yisrael. Ravashi says the symbolism would have been catastrophic. Heaven forbid that good, what the word Tov represents, good and benefit, should have ceased, should have stopped from Israel. The Gemara will continue discussing the letter Tes, coming off of this discussion involving the word Tov. The first letter of that word happens to be Tes, and it will elaborate on the issue of seeing the letter Tess in a dream, which Amir Sashem will pick up with in our next shiur. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.